Now we're holding on page Tzadik Ches in Bava Basra, Ois Kuf Zayin. A good part of the Perek, after it dealt with the basic dinim of Yerusha, it starts talking about the dinim of Bechorah. We know the Torah tells us that a Bechorah gets a double portion, so it starts going into all the details and the dinim of that. One of the first things we have to establish is, when we say that a Bechorah gets Pishnayim, a double portion, what does that mean? So we always learn as kids, it means that, for example, you have five boys, let's say, and one of them is a Bechorah, so it means you split the estate into six portions, he gets two of the portions, and everybody else gets one. But the Gemara asks, is that in fact, page study confess in Bava Basra, yeah. But the Gemara starts by asking, is that in fact so, or does it mean that the Bechor gets two-thirds of the entire estate, no matter how many other children there are, and then everybody else splits up the remaining third? So the Gemara goes and the Gemara brings a couple of proofs that it is in fact the first way that the Bechor gets double as much as any of the other brothers, and a couple of the proofs are from the Psukim say that Reuven should have been the Bechor, but then the Bechor was taken away from him and given to Yosef. So in that connection, the Gemara brings the following. One of the Psukim that the Braisa brings, Vanina Sati Lachosh Sheba Achad V'Gomer, the Pasuk says, Bavasra, page Tzadik Ches. The Pasuk says, Yaakov says to Yosef, I have given you Shechem Achad, one Shechem, over your brothers. A different Mephoshim talk about, does Shechem mean the actual city of Shechem in Eretz Yisrael, which was in fact later on in the territory of Yosef, or does it mean a portion? Yaakov says that I took it, that I conquered it from the Amorite, B'charbi uvakashti. Now what does that mean? B'charbi uvakashti means with my sword and with my bow. But what does that mean? Did Yaakov really win that with his sword and his bow? Now Rashi mentions in Pashat Pshat, yeah, when Shimon and Levi attacked Shechem, and then afterwards all the Goyim came and were threatening to attack Yaakov's family, then Yaakov donned weapons and went to fight them. But still, the Gemara is bothered by the way that Yaakov saying it makes it sound like he won it with his own powers, Vale Karnema, and you have a Pasuk until him, that a Yid says, I don't trust in my bow, and my sword is not going to save me. So at the very least, he should say the Eibush to help me with my sword and my bow. Ella, no, we have to understand, Harbi zu tefila kashti zu bakasha. When he says, b'charbi or b'kashti, he means with my tefillas and with my pleas to Hashem. For one thing, the word b'kashti itself, you put a different nekudas on it, you have the word b'kashasi. Rashi also mentions over there, Marshal refers to it over here, that the Amorim over here doesn't actually mean the Amorim, the Knanim, who lived in Shechem and the area around it. It actually means that he won against Esav, who acted like the Amorim. Marshal points out also he married wives from the Amorim, from the Knanim in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he can also be called an Amori because he and his descendants became corrupt like the Knanim. Anyway, Yaakov is saying that I won it in that way by davening and pleading to Hashem. One interesting explanation is that Charbi and Kashti, that Charbi refers to the fixed tefillos, and Kashti then refers to the individual pleas that a person does on his own to the Eibishter. So the idea would be, in other words, a sword, you don't need particular training to use a sword. Anybody who's in the area is going to get hit by it. Mashenka, a bow, you need training for. So the idea is, in other words, you have the standard tefillos, which themselves have tremendous power, and then you have on top of that a person's own individual requests where he puts in his own etzim into it, and therefore and thereby they have an effect. There's a famous vort on it that's brought that with a bow in particular, the closer you pull it to yourself, the closer you pull the arrow towards yourself, the further it'll fly and the more effect it'll have. And the same way tefillah, the more kavanah you put into it, the more it'll fly and the more it'll have an effect. There's Maimorim from the Rebbe and from the previous Rebbeim that talk about also an angle on it that pulling it back as much as possible represents the greater degree of bittul that you put into it, then the tefillah has a greater effect. And so forth. Marshall also points out another reason why Yaakov uses this metaphor of a sword and a bow is because we find Esav was given the bracha, al-chav v'chatichya, you'll live because of your sword. Your sword will conquer lands for you. Yishmael was roi v'kashas. He was an expert bowman. So therefore, Yaakov is saying, I was able to counteract both of them with my tefillos and with my pleas to Hashem. Okay. So now the Gemara says, "Boy min Rav Chelba min Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni." So Rav Chelba asks Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, "Ma ro Yaakov shenata b'chorah min Reuven v'nosna l'Yosef?" Why did Yaakov decide to take away the b'chorah from Reuven and give it to Yosef? Now the words v'nosna l'Yosef are in brackets over here because they're not in the original in Yaakov. And in fact, it seems they don't belong in the original text of the Gemara, because the Gemara is first assuming that the question is why Yaakov took it away from Reuven before we get to why he gave it to Yosef. That's a separate question. First of all, why did he take away from Reuven? So the Gemara asked, "What do you mean, Ma Ra?" So what do you mean, what did he see? The Pasuk explicitly tells us, the Pasuk says that when Reuven interfered with Yaakov's bed, so we know the Pasuk in Vayishlach tells us, Vayishka Vesbila, the Gemara tells us he didn't actually lay, Rashi brings on the Pasuk, he didn't actually lay with her, that would be a serious Aveira, he just moved Yaakov's bed because he figured that Yaakov shouldn't be together with Bila, it's bad enough that she was together with Rachel all the time, and outranking Leah, but now that Rachel has passed away, at least Yaakov should be with Leah, so Reuven took on himself to interfere with things, and therefore Yaakov took away the Bechorah from him. So it's very clear in the Pesukim why he did that. So what do you mean why he took it away from Reuven? Fine. Elamar Rosh and Nosna the Yosef. The real question is, why do you give it to Yosef? Why not to one of the other Shvatim? Iyun Yaakov points out, maybe he could have given it to Dina's children. Fine, you're going to have it's taken away from Reuven. Shimon and Levi, fine, they acted wrongly in the matter of Shechem. Yaakov criticized them for that, so he may not want to give them anything. Yehuda, he already gave Malchus, so fine, let him give the Bechorah to Dina's children. I don't know why even Yaakov doesn't figure let him give it to Yisachar or Zvulun then, but anyway, the question is, why Dr. Yosef? So he answers, Reb Shmuel ben Achmeni answers, Emshalachal Moshal Amar Dabar Doimer. I'll give you a Moshal and you'll see what it's comparable to. The Balabais should give a Yosem Besech Bese. A Balabais raised an orphan in his house. So the Balabais represents Yosef and the orphan represents Yaakov, because Yosef took care of, supported Yaakov during all the years in the Mitzrayim. L'yomim Hesher Oseh Yosem, later on that Yosem in the Nimshal over here, Yaakov, became rich. He has a Bechora available because he's going to take it away from Reuven. V'omar, so he figures to himself, Ahaneu the Balabais Minachosai. Who is it appropriate for me to give this Minachosim, that he should benefit from it? The Balabais who supported me all this time. So the same way, in other words, when Yaakov has a Bechora to take away from Reuven, he's going to give it to Yosef, who supported him loyally all these years. Now, Marsha points out there's something missing in the Moshel. I mean, Reuven, this story with Reuven and then Yaakov's bed happened many years earlier, that he had taken away the Bechora from Reuven, is also many years earlier. What do you mean, L'yomim Hashir, that all of a sudden he became rich and he has something available, when all of that is long before they ever went to Mitzrayim? So Marsha explains, okay, because Yaakov didn't want to give it, during his lifetime, he wanted to give it as close as possible to before he passes away. So therefore, we can use the Marshal that it's as if he only got it now. He has it available for long before, but since he's only going to actually exercise it now, so it can be considered samuch l'misasei.
The Marshal doesn't have any negativity in it. The act that he did something negative, so how does the Marshal display that?
So that's what the Gemara is going to ask, that if Yaakov had something of his own, then fine, but because you're saying only because Reuven did bad, therefore Yaakov has now something to give to Yosef, that's exactly what the Gemara is going to ask. So the Gemara asks Amalei, so Rav Chelba asks, V'ilav dechota Reuven, so think about it, and if Reuven had not done anything wrong, lo mahani le Yosef le midi or midam, would Yaakov not have given Yosef anything? After all, Mele, if he gives him something of his own, then you could say that it's like in this Marshal where he has something of his own, he now has money, or whatever, and he's going to give it to his Balabais. But is it fair that therefore he should be taking something that he's taking it away from Reuven, but then it belongs equally well to all the other brothers? How is he depriving all the other ones of all the other brothers of it and giving it davka to Yosef? So Rashbam types out. Let's say, for example, you can have the brachas that Yaakov gave on his own to Yosef and his children. The bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, the Yidgulorei v'Kerav Aretz. The bracha that he gave to Yosef himself, Nekelo v'Icha v'Yazareka, Tiena l'Rosh Yosef, is all of that. You could say that's like your marshal of him giving something special to the one who gave him Hana, to the one who benefited him all these years. But now, the fact that he took away the Bechorah from Reuven and gave it to Yosef, it wouldn't be fair to deprive all the other Shvatim of it. There must be a different reason. So, Ella, so Reb Chelbe says, Reb Yonason, Rav Choloi Kach Omer. You should know, your Rebbe, Reb Yonason, did not say that. You find all over Shas, we have Reb Shmuel Menachmeni saying things, usually in Agadda, in the name of Reb Yechanan. So Reb Chelbe says to Reb Shmuel Menachmeni, I was asking you if maybe you have a better reason, but since apparently you don't, then I'll tell you what your Rebbe, Reb Yonason, said. Maybe you never heard of it before. By rights, the Bechorah should have come from Rachel, because after all, Yaakov planned to marry Rachel first, and had he married Rachel first, the Pashtus, she would have had children first, and then Yosef would have been, Yosef would have been the actual firstborn. As the pasuk says, Eva told us Yaakov, Yosef. These are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. Now Yaakov had 12 sons, plus various daughters, but Yosef is considered his main son for a variety of reasons. Rashi mentions a couple of them in Parshas Vayeshev. The Medrash mentions more of them. So therefore, so it should have by rights been that Yosef would actually be the firstborn. But Leah got ahead of her in davening for Rachmim from Hashem that she should be able to marry Yaakov, as we'll say soon. So Leah got there first. So therefore Leah ended up having the firstborn ahead of Rachel. But because Rachel herself demonstrated exceptional tznius, as again we're going to go on to say further, therefore Hashem restored that to her. That after all, the Bechorah does go to her firstborn, who would have actually been the firstborn had it not been for the fact that Leah got in there first. There's an interesting explanation, by the way, in that connection. So here the Gemara is going to say that it was because Leah davened for Rachmim, therefore Hashem made it happen that she married Yaakov first. But you know, we also have in the Pshat of Psukim, at least on the surface, the reason she ended up marrying Yaakov first is because of Lavan's trickery. Which as we're going to go on, that Yaakov knew in advance that that could happen, and we have the whole thing with Rachel and Leah and the famous passwords and so forth. The Gemara is going to tell all this familiar story we're going to have now in the Gemara. But there is an interesting vort on that. You know, we just said a few days ago in the Haggadah, Arami Ovid Ovi Vayerim Mitzrayimah. So the famous question is, what does one have to do with the other? Because Lavan and Bikash Lakar Sakol, therefore we wound up in Mitzrayim, what's the connection? So there's an interesting explanation that relates it to our Gemara over here. We're saying that the Bechorah should have, by rights, Yosef should have been the actual Bechorah. Now, what would have happened if Yosef had been the actual Bechorah? If now Yaakov shows him favoritism, and he gives him the Ksonis Pasim, and so on and so forth, would the brothers have resented it? No, but Derech Klal, it's a normal thing, the brother gets, the Bechorah gets special treatment. So they wouldn't have been jealous of him, they never would have sold him, and the whole thing would never have happened, and we wouldn't have wound up in Mitzrayim, at least not in that way. Because of Lavan's trickery, because Arami Ovidavi, therefore the result was that Yosef was the next to last brother, and therefore when Yaakov is treating him with favoritism, because he had reason for it, among other things, because after all he is Rachel's Bechor, but the other Shvatim didn't see it that way, and they got jealous, and Yosef was sold, and everything developed from there. So my kidamta Leah b'Rachmim. When we say that Leah got ahead of Rachel with davening for Rachmim, what does that mean? So dichtiv, like this, the pasuk says when it first introduces Leah, the ena Leah rakos. It says that Leah's eyes were rakos. Now, Mephoshim on the pasuk explained that it's possible to understand rakos as meaning beautiful. Targum Onkelos, in fact, translates it yayon, which means beautiful. So there are Mephoshim who explain that in a simple pshat, it can mean that her eyes are beautiful, and then it means the rest of her is beautiful as well, or that particularly her eyes were noticeable. But the Gemara is taking it in the more straightforward sense that rakos means weak. Or teary. So the question is, my rakos, mamish, do you mean that her eyes were actually weak? And as Rashbam says over here, teary, that she's constantly crying. The question is, why would the pasuk tell us such a derogatory thing about Leah? We find the Torah is careful not even to speak in a derogatory way about a behemah tmeah. As we find by the Mabul, when Hashem gives Noach instructions, mina behemah tahora, that you should take, or actually when the Torah is summarizing what Noach did, how he brought the animals into the Teva, mina behemah tahora, he brought from the Torah animals, or mina behemah. So instead of saying outright tmeya, it says asher einena tahora. And we see the Gemara tells us in Psachim that it means that asher, that the Torah is using like 8 extra letters in order to avoid the word tome. So we see the Torah won't even speak in a derogatory way about non-kosher animals. So b'gnusa tzadikim dibra kosev, would the Torah tell us something derogatory about Leah, that her eyes were weak and that she's constantly crying? So now, what does it mean? Ela Amar Rabbi Elazar Shemakne Seha Aruchos. It means that her gifts are very long. The kahuna, aruchas for kahuna, aruchas for levi, aruchas for malchus. She has tremendously long, long-lasting gifts as far as kahuna, levi, and malchus. Because when you get down to it, the kohanim and leviim and the kings all descend from her. The kohanim and leviim from Shevet Levi, the kings from Shevet Yehuda. So she has tremendously long gifts that go for generations upon generations later on.
Why describe her eyes as rakos?
So one explanation is that it means that. So one point is that it means that it means that the eyes are something that you notice right away. You on a person's face, you notice them. So the same way, these gifts of hers that Hashem gave through her are very noticeable, very very prominent. So Marshall also points out another meaning of it as well, based on the Medrash, is that the places where the Shechina rested in Yosef's territory, in particular Mishkan Shiloh, were only for a short while. Mishkan Shiloh lasted 300 odd years, as opposed to the Beis HaMikdash, which was built mostly in Yehuda's territory, who comes from Leah. That was Aruchos, that lasted much longer, the first and second Beis HaMikdash, and the third one, Shibana Meir V'Yamenu, which will last forever. So that's also Aruchos, it'll be much longer. So then Marsha also points out the word rakos can also be a lotion of kingship. At the beginning of our Masechta, when we had the story of Hurdus, we had the expression that the Romans sent him an angry letter and said, don't think of yourself as being such a big shot, loy richa v'loy bar richa. Don't think you're not a king and you're not a son of a king. You're only an eved who killed his masters and made himself king. So we see that the word richa means a king. One explanation of when they said in front of Yosef Avreich, when they announced in front of him Avreich and Parshas Miketz, that's one explanation. Also, Rashi brings on the pasuk over there. So therefore, Matnesseha Aruchos can also mean that in Elea Rakos, that she has kingship, that she has kingship and royalty coming from her. It is interesting, by the way, Evan Ezra on the pasuk mentioned brings a pirush from someone named Ben Ephraim. Marshall refers to it over here. This Ben Ephraim also wanted to say that the word rakos is really aruchos, meaning long. But apparently he wanted to understand with it, not that, like we're saying over here in the Gemara, that her gifts are long-lasting or anything like that, but just that it means that her eyes were longer than usual. So the Evan Ezra, who is known for his sharp wit and also for a bit for his obscurity, he says on him, "V'hu ha'yachaser aleph." This Ben Ephraim was short, himself is missing an aleph. Some of Farshim on Evan Ezra explain that either what he means is a play on words. This Ben Ephraim, if you take away the aleph from his name, then it becomes out Ben Parim. So he's a son of cows. Or the other explanation is the word aleph means teaching, like aleph ha'chachma. So it means he's lacking in teaching and in knowledge. He doesn't know how to explain a pasuk. In any case, so here the Gemara is using a similar drasha, but here it's saying not about her eyes themselves, but rather about the gift of Kahuna and Levia that she was given, and Malchus. Anyway, so that's one explanation. But the other explanation, Rava or Rav Oma, La'olam Rakos Mamish, it does actually mean that her eyes were in fact weak and teary. V'loy Gnai Hula, Ela Shvach Hula. On the contrary, though, it's not a Gnai for her. It's not something derogatory that she looked bad. On the contrary, it tells us something good about her. Oh, another point, by the way, as far as why doctor the eyes, Iyun Yaakov says, because it means she was putting her eyes on and davening with her eyes turned to Hashem, that she should have the schus, that such things should come from her. Anyway. So what happened? So v'lo gnai hula the shvach hula. On the contrary, it wasn't a derogatory thing. It was actually a good thing about her. Shahosa shemas al parshas drachim. She would hear from people who sit at the crossroads and talk. Bnei adam people. Shoy oimim. They used to say beis bonim yeshlo the Rivka, beis bonis yeshlo the Lavan. Rivka has two sons. Lavan has two daughters. And it was a known thing already in the family of the Avos that they marry their close relative. Their close relatives. Avraham married Sara, who was his niece. Yitzchak married Rivka, who was his cousin. So it was expected the same way. Yaakov and Esav would be marrying Lavan's children as would be marrying Lavan's daughters as well. And we know, in fact, we know, of course, everybody knew that Avraham had told Eliezer, Le'sikach Isha, Le'mnois Knaan, and Yitzchak had given similar instructions, so therefore you can be sure that they're going to marry within their family. So they figured, Gdola Legado Uktana Lekatan. So the older daughter will marry the older son, and the younger daughter will marry the younger son. So Leah will marry Esav, and then Yaakov will marry Rahel. So when Leah heard this, she would sit by the same crossroads to also ask, Godol ma maisa, what is this older son, who is apparently my basherta, what is he like? What does he do? And they would tell her, Ishi Adeyat Sayed, he's a hunter, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara, Rahu is an evil person, Malastim Brias, he robs people. Then she'd ask Cotton Mamaisa, what about the younger one? What is he doing? And they tell her, Ish Tom Yoshevoyalam, he's a wholesome person, a tzmimusdika person, who sits in the tents of Torah. So she was very disturbed by the idea that she's going to have to marry this Rosh HaEsav. Then Yoda makes an interesting point. Maybe she's asking about the older son. Why is she asking about the younger son as well? Why is it her business? If the plan is not that she's going to marry Yaakov anyhow, what does she care what he's like? This is an interesting verb. She thought to herself, you know what, look, we know there are cases in history, the Gemaras and Midrashim mention, where a woman, Tzadekis, was able to transform a Rosha. Famously, that's the explanation of why Yaakov was held. It was held against Yaakov that he hid Dinah in a box rather than Esav. He didn't want that Esav should see her and marry her, but he shouldn't have done that. She could have been Mashpia and Esav for good. So now Leah thinks to herself, you know what, maybe it's not so bad. Maybe I'll be able to be Mashpia on him and make him into a good person. So she asks, what's his brother like? If his brother is also a no-good-nick, okay, well, then he had never had a chance in the first place. Maybe I can help him. But then when she's told his brother is a tzaddik, then she thinks to herself, so wait, his brother and his parents also are all tzaddikim, and yet he never learned from them. What chance do I have? So therefore now she didn't know what to do with herself. So she was crying until her eyelashes fell out. So now her eyes were indeed weak and teary, but it's not against her, but it's a good thing. She was davening so much that Hashem should have rachmanos on her and she shouldn't have to marry Esav. In the same vein, later on, the pasuk says after Yaakov ended up marrying her, Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. When it says that Hashem saw that Leah was hated, and therefore, and then she conceived and gave birth to Reuven and Shimon and so forth. So again, we have to ask, my snua. What does it mean that she was snua? Even a snua mamash, do you mean that she was literally snua, that Yaakov actually hated her? Impossible. Same thing. Efter gnus behema tmeya ledibra kosher, for the Torah wouldn't even tell us something derogatory about a non-kosher animal, at least not without using a longer expression, gnus tzadikim dibra kosher. Would the Torah tell us something negative against Leah and say flat out that she was hated? Ella, my snua, roa kodesh profus, snuin, maisa Esav beina, Hashem saw that Esav's ways were that what Esav does were hateful in her eyes, and therefore right away Hashem made her pregnant. In other words, Marsha teaches out, first of all, listen, it can't be any way that she was actually hated, because the Gemara tells us in Nedarim that there are nine things, nine midos, b'nei tesha midos, the Gemara calls it over there, nine types of things, where if a husband and wife are in this frame of mind, they're going to have children who are no goodniks. And one of them is b'nei snua, when the couple hates each other, and nevertheless they have relations, and the children are not going to be good. Chas v'shalom, we would say that about Reuven and Shimon. And certainly Yaakov wouldn't do such a thing. So Marsha explains like this. We can still say that what it means, so the flow of the Gemara over here would be like this. Before Yaakov saw that the first Bia, she right away becomes pregnant, then yeah, he did have in mind that he might even want to divorce her. But then once she became pregnant, right, therefore Hashem made her pregnant right away. Now we usually say the Imahos were infertile for many years because HaKadosh Baruch Hu Misa'avel Tzvilos and Shetzidikin, Hashem really wants the of the tzaddikim. But here, that would boomerang because then he would end up divorcing Leah. So Hashem had to right away make her pregnant. Once she became pregnant, then Yaakov says, listen, she's going to be the mother of my children. I can't divorce her. Now, Marsha also explains like this. So then you have to ask, what about when Reuven was conceived? Well, that was on the wedding night. He didn't yet know that she was Leah. The whole reason he would dislike her is because he figured that she was involved, that she went along with Lavan's plan to substitute her for her sister. Well, the wedding night, he didn't know that yet, as the Gemara is going to go on to say now. Therefore, there was no problem of Ben Snua, of Bnei Snua by that. And once she's pregnant with Reuven, then already there's no Snua anymore. So when she says, when Shimon is born, and she says, he just means there was a point when I was snua, but now I'm not anymore. So, but anyway, but now we're saying that you don't even need all of that. That snua Leia means that she hated the idea that that she should have to marry Esav. And now, when then immediately the Eibishter made her pregnant, and therefore there's no danger of that anymore. Adrava, later on, Rashi mentions on the Pesukim in Parshas Vayetzeh, later on, when Rachel was infertile for many years and Esav started having ideas, maybe Yaakov will divorce her and I'll marry her. And in the end, therefore, Vayishkach HaSrachma, the Eibishter, gave her a pregnancy and she also gave birth to Yosef, and that forestalled any of Esav's plots with that. Okay, so that's what we mean that Leah got ahead of, that's what we mean when we say that Leah got ahead of Rachel with Rachel. It means she davened so much that she shouldn't have to marry Esav, that not only she had the schus to marry Yaakov, but she got there even ahead of Rachel. But because of that, the result was Yosef was not the Bechor, and therefore we're saying that's why Yaakov ended up giving the Bechor to Yosef, because by rights he should have been the Bechor in the first place. So the Gemara continues. There is a very interesting vort on this, by the way, from Reb Levick, that had his father, that talks about, we had a couple of days ago in the Kriya, we had the pause on Shabbos, we had the pause of Kiloisi Shtachva L'Kel Acher. And we know the ratio over there is extra large, corresponding to you have the extra large dalet in Shema, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and counteracting and Zelo Masel Selekim, so therefore you have an extra large ratio in Kel Acher. So Reb Levick makes the point over there that it's brought in many places in Sifrei Kabbalah that Rachel and Leah both represent the letter Dalet, and Rachel represents Leah in particular represents a larger Dalet. So he explains that that if Esav had had his way about it, he would have turned her Dalet into a Resh, which is, on the one hand, that means in terms of gematria, that means adding 196, because you go from 4 to 200, and in terms of shape, it means subtracting, taking off the part of the dalet that sticks out in the back, which is called a koitz, kuf vav tzadik, also gematria 196. So he would have turned her dalet into a resh, and then what would have become of her? But instead, she davened for Rachamim, and her dalet was preserved, and she came together with Yaakov. Okay. The Gemara says, "My tznius hoisav abba Rachel." Now, the other thing we said was because Rachel showed exceptional tznius, therefore Hashem restored the bechorah to her son Yosef. What was all that about? So, the pasuk says, when Yaakov and Rachel met, "Vayaged Yaakov leRachel ki achi aviyahu." So he tells Rachel that he's her father's brother, v'chigan Rivkahu, and that he's the son of Rivka. Now, what do you mean achi aviyahu? He's not Lavan's brother. Valed ben achos aviyahu. He's Lavan's nephew. He's the son of his sister. Now, granted, Marshall says sometimes we use the word och to mean a relative in general, but here when he says ki ben rifkahu, he doesn't need to spell out. He doesn't need to use the word achi in that looser sense of relative. So what does it mean? So it means like this. Ella Omala. So here's how the conversation went. He asks her minstvasli, will you marry me? Omrele Ain, she says yes. Miu itzvi abaramahu. However, my father is a cheater and a swindler. Velo yochlesle, and you're not going to be able to overcome him. Omala. So he asks her my rama usse. How exactly would he plan to trick me? By the way, Marshall points out in this connection when we're saying that the word achi ovi, well, okay, let's learn the next thing, but she says, how does he plan to trick me? Omrele, so she tells him, Isli achosa de kshishimina, I have an older sister, vole minsevli makamo, he's not going to allow me to marry you before she gets married. Omala, so Yaakov tells her, not a problem. Ochiv ano, but amos, I'm his brother, meaning I'm his equal in trickery. So Marsha points out, by the way, when Lavan knew that as well, Lavan knew that Yaakov is his match in trickery. Therefore, you have also in the Pesukim, when Yaakov first comes over there, and the Pesuk says he worked for Lavan for a month for free, and Lavan says, achi, 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 abantani chinam, you're working for me for nothing, what do you want as your wage? So Marsha explains, he's telling him, listen, I realize that you're a swindler like me, so you've got to have some kind of agenda over here. You're not just working for me free, samazo, what's your agenda? What trick do you have up your sleeve over there? And Yaakov tells him that I want to marry one of your daughters. The Medrash, in fact, explains that actually what was going on over there during that month is Lavan was paying Yaakov like only half of what he should be earning during that time. Yaakov tells him, because I'm not working here for money, I didn't come here for money, I came here because I want to marry one of your daughters. Anyway, so, okay, so Omer Lei, so Rachel says to him, you're telling me you're his equal in Ramos? Or me shori lehu the tzaddiki with saguya but Ramos? Are tzaddikim like you allowed to act in a deceitful, dishonest way? And he says, hey, yes, as the pasuk says, im novar ki tovar, we're going to have it in Zaptarda in a couple of days, shvi shapesa. With the clean one, novar is a word in Lashon Kodesh that means clean and honest. Titovo, you act cleanly and honestly. Vim ikish, and with the crooked one, titapo, you act in a crooked and deceitful way. So yes, if he's going to be crooked and deceitful, then I can pay him back in his own coins. In particular, the Ritva says over here that it means that a tzaddik can do things like Yaakov is saying over here to protect himself against the swindler's cheating. He certainly can't go and cheat. He certainly wouldn't be entitled to go and cheat Lavan in other areas not related to this. But to save himself from Lavan's trickery, that he can do, even if it means acting in a less than honest way. So how to do it? Muscle the simonim. So he gave her simonim. These will be our simonim on the wedding night. That this way, if he tries to substitute Leah for you, then we'll know what's going on. Well, in the end, Lavan did try to. In the end, Lavan, of course, did go and substitute Leah. So Leah, when they brought in Leah as the kala. Instead of Rachel, Savra, then Rachel figured to herself, Hashta michsfach asoi. Now my sister is going to be embarrassed. She's not going to know the simonim, and therefore, and she'll be exposed as having gone along with Lavan's trickery, and she'll be embarrassed. Masatinu ni'alah, so she gave over the simonim to her sister. What were the simonim, by the way? There's an interesting idea that's brought in some svarim, that the simonim were the three special mitzvahs of the Jewish women. In which case, so that's one explanation. The Chidah brings, the Ben Yehoyada brings from the Chidah, who in turn brings from an earlier Mekubal, that the simon was that she would touch him on his ear, thumb, and toe, the same place where we find the Kohenim had blood placed on them during the Miluim, the same place as where Mitzorah has blood and oil placed on him, so that would be the simon. Thus the pasuk says, so that was her tznius, that she gave over the simonim to her sister, so her sister wouldn't be embarrassed.
What's the connection between tznius and?
Because tznius means that tznius doesn't just mean bodily tznius. Tznius means that to be able to keep a secret, to be able to like this, she didn't publicize, and she wanted to avoid it being publicized that her sister should be embarrassed. So that's tznius. The Gemara, by the way, elsewhere mentions that this trait persisted later on in Rachel's descendants as well. Shaul, the pasuk says on him when he was first appointed as king, so he comes back home. He'd been looking for the lost donkeys, and they have a little story over there. His uncle asks him, where were you all this time? And Shaul tells him, we were looking for the donkeys, and we went to Shmuel, and he told us the donkeys are found. Didn't say a word about the kingship till Shmuel calls everybody together and announces that Shaul is king. Later on, you have Esther, and Lo yigid Esther asama v'esmeralta. So this tznius, this ability to keep a secret, lasted throughout Rachel's descendants for many generations. Thus the pasuk says, "Vayhiva boiker." It was in the morning. Vihinehi Leah, and behold, she is Leah. What do you mean? Mekladat hashta lav Leah haboy, and the night before she wasn't Leah. Ella, no, that's what it is. Mitoch simonim shemosel Yaakov leRachel, because Yaakov had given the simonim to Rachel, omasaut and the Leah, and in turn she gave them over to Leah. Loi habayyada lada yishaita. He taka didn't know until the next morning, and he discovers that he's been with Leah. Now Marsha points out that he should have been able to recognize her with the voices. With the voices, didn't Rachel and Leah Bapashtas have different voices? So first of all, Marsha says that no, Yaakov didn't expect at all that Leah would have been given the simonim. So he had no reason, even if he didn't recognize the voice 100%, he would have thought the same way as Yitzchak, for example, Hakoko Yaakov, Ayadayim Yidei Esav. But yet he allowed, you know, the fact that these are hairy hands and Yaakov doesn't have such hands, it must be Yaakov, even if the voice sounds a little different than usual. So Yaakov here basically made the same mistake.
Sounds like a
negative, midah. It's sort of midah, negative, but I don't know that it's really that. It's a, so actually, Marsha does bring from the Medrash where Yaakov accuses Leah, you know, look at you, you're a swindler, the daughter of a swindler. Your father is a cheater, and so are you. And Leah answers him right back. And what did you do? And what did you do to get the brachnu? And what did you do to get the brachas? But that's with that said, though, there is. there is actually an explanation that I've seen some someplace that actually Rochel Poshet hid out in the room all that night. Now you have to realize, besides for the simonim, the pashtus, Yaakov and Leah would have been talking other things before or after they had relations as husbands and wives normally do. So I once saw an explanation, I don't remember the source, that that Rochel Poshet hid out in the room, and whenever Leah had to say something, she would answer back, so that Yaakov would hear her voice and then think that it's her. There is a fascinating explanation in this also, on top of that, also, that Leah may never have realized what Rachel had done for her. Befrat, you know, especially according to the explanation that the simonim were the three mitzvahs of a Jewish woman. So look, Rachel would have had to teach them to Leah anyhow, because look, you know, eventually you're gonna get married, you need to know what these mitzvahs are. But we find later on in the whole story of the Dudoyim, when Leah says to Rachel, isn't enough you took my husband and now you want to take my son's Dudoyim? What do you mean, how you talking you took my husband? Rachel should say right then, what do you mean I took your husband? Fakert, you took my husband. I was supposed to marry him first. She never said a word. And the Medrash says that's the famous thing when after the Churban, when the Ovaris and Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody are davening for that, the Eidishter should have Rachmanis on the Jewish people, and Hashem says, no, I don't want to hear from you, until Rochel comes along and says, look, I gave up my husband for my sister, that she shouldn't be embarrassed, and I never said a word of it, and fine, Yesh Sochel the philosopher for Shohu Bonim Ligvulim, the Jewish people will come out of Golos and have the Gola Amitis Vashlema in the schus of Rochel, in the schus of the Tznius of Rochel, in the schus that she didn't want to allow her sister to be embarrassed. Yeah, Rochel Mavakal Banehar, exactly that. That's it doesn't say that in the Pesukim explicitly. It just says Rochel Mavakal Banehar, and Hashem says Mini Kolich Midechi Ki Yesh Sachol LePhilosach. Yeah, the Medrash teaches out the Medrash in Eich Magabe and one of the Psichtas teaches out in detail this whole thing that Rochel, all the Ovos and Moshe Rabbeinu and everybody come before the Eibishter, each one pleading for Rachmanis for the Jewish people, and Hashem says to each one of them, I don't want to hear from you. The Jewish people have not done anything like what you Avraham Avinu taught the whole world that there's an Eibishter in the world, and they abandon that, and Yitzchak comes and pleads in the schus of the Akedah, and Hashem says nothing doing and so forth, until Rachel comes along and gives this whole plea about what she did in this whole story of Rachel, and the Eibishter says, you're right. Yesh Sachol LePhilosach, you I'm going to listen to, and B'shav Avonim L'Gyolam.
Is there a connection to Netzevet and Yishai here?
Well, there is also, you know, that's true also. Netzevis also kept a secret all those years there that she had been with Yishai and not that's true also, yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola for Yud Kes Nissen. We say in the Haggadah to the Ben Rosh, we say Ilo Hayasham Loyo Nigel. If he had been there in Mitzrayim, he wouldn't have been redeemed. He wouldn't have been redeemed from Mitzrayim. So we know, of course, in Mitzrayim, not all of them were redeemed. You had many people who didn't want to leave, and you had 4/5 of the Jewish people died in the 3 days of Makas Choshech. Now this will not happen in the Gola Asida. Everybody will be brought out of Golos. Not one will remain behind. And Pesukim, actually, you know, like this, it's not just a song, no Jew will be left behind. There's open Pesukim in Yechezkel and in other places in Tanakh that say explicitly that not a single Yid will be left behind, even the kind who didn't want to leave Mitzrayim then, but that's what we tell the Rosha. Ilu hayasham, if you were there in Mitzrayim, lahir nigel, but you're not there, you're here, you're going to be with us in the Gola Hasida, and you will tackle also be redeemed. Continuing on the genome of tzitzis, the threads of tzitzis have to be shozer, right? They have to be twined. You look at your tzitzis, you'll see that you have two threads made out, each one made up of several fibers that are twined together, because that's only psil tefela. So that's like a psila, like a cord. And it says that about the tchelas, and then the lavon has to be the same thing, because the tchelas and lavon are basically the same thing, because like we learned yesterday, it says gedilim tasavacha. Now, they have to be spun and twined l'shem tzitzis. So when they start the process, they have to say that it's done l'shem tzitzis. It can also be a woman can be making the threads as well. Whether they can put tzitzis into the beged is another matter. We'll get to that later. But they can definitely make the threads. So we tell her make it l'shem mitzvah. So, in fact, in the Siddur, the Altareba says that she should say explicitly that she's making it l'shem mitzvah tzitzis. Because it says tasa l'chol, which means that it should be for the choy. If they're not made, if they're not spun or twined l'shman, then they're posel. There are bale nefesh that are machmer in themselves, even when it comes to the combing of the wool, that it should be done l'shem mitzvah, but the minhag is not like that. But this is why you have the best kind of tzitzis are avoidus yad, the ones made by hand, because you have the whole question about machine tzitzis. Since after all, machines can't have in mind lashma, so therefore we what not yet anyway. So therefore we prefer to avoid that. Now, if a goy spins them or twines them, even if a yid is watching and I'm telling him l'shem tzitzis, then they're possible. We have a concept in halacha, nochriya daita de nafshe ka'ovid. A goy, when he's doing things, is doing it on his own das, and he's not necessarily, just because you tell him you have to do it l'shma, doesn't mean that he's actually going to have that in mind. So there's Kuntus Acharon over here where the Alter Rebbe discusses machlokus between the Rambam and the Rosh about, so when it comes to eventually when we get to Hilchos Tefillin, in the same thing. What about, for example, the preparation of the parchment? Does it have to be done? Can a goy do it? Is it good enough? The Rambam holds no. The Rosh holds that yes. But when it comes to tzitzis, the Rosh would agree. Because here you're talking about the Alter Rebbe explains, because the long activity, and it's not likely the goy is going to have in mind l'shem mitzvah for the entire thing. So he's not going to be choshish for the yid. So now, if the yid helps out a little bit, then it does work. But now, if a cheder shoyt of a cotton does it, if a gadol is standing over him and telling him to do it l'shem tzitzis, then it's kosher, because then the cheder shoyt of a cotton don't have a das of their own, and therefore they'll go according to your das. Okay.